Well, hello and welcome to the latest edition of the Daggers and Lids podcast. It's chapter 5. I know we've just done a recent podcast up at Headingley, but we are back remotely and we've got plenty to get through on this latest edition. Thank you so much for everybody who's been downloading and subscribing on our YouTube channel at Daggers and Lids. And you can catch us on the video podcast there or wherever you get your audio podcast from as well. Thank you so much for downloading and subscribing. Lids, it's been a couple of days since I've seen you, and still plenty has gone on. We're already up to chapter 5. Can you believe it?
I know. It's been good fun, hasn't it? It was nice to do the pod in person the other day up in sunny Headingley with a bit of Oasis blaring out in the background.
But 100%.
It feels like we're in the thick of things now, doesn't it? Obviously, we're going to preview the New Zealand series a bit later. But obviously, you had a busy weekend because you were up in sunny Derby. And it did look very sunny, actually, which was a plus.
Well, we previewed it to a certain degree, the Charlotte Edwards Cup finals day, a proper finals day, if you like, as opposed to what last year at New Road. Was a eliminator game between the second and third place sides in the Charlotte Edwards group table. And then the team who finished top, which just so happened to be the Blaze last year, they got a bye straight through to the final. Now, last year, the Blaze were undone by the Southern Vipers, and that was their second. They won back-to-back Charlotte Edwards Cup final. So this time we have two. It was a full finals day, like the men have it. Two semi-finals and then a final. So let's get into it, because we're going to be speaking to Katie Martin about the New Zealand series that is coming up for the England women, the 3 one-day internationals and the 5 T20. So we've got a ton to get through. And we'll also, a little bit later, just run through what's been happening on the other international series between Sri Lanka and the West Indies and India versus South Africa. So, sunny day at Derby. It was glorious at Barbados. It really did live up to its name. And we had the first semi-final, which was Essential Sparks against the Blaze. So Sparks finishing in fourth position in the table, the Blaze first, an incredible group stage for them, having played 10 and won 9 of their games. The Sparks were without Amy Jones. Now, she picked up a little bit of an injury in the previous game. Both of these games, both of these semi-finals, by the way, were actually replays of the final group matches. So they knew each other. I mean, they know each other well anyway, but they'd just played against each other in the final round of group matches. And then they went and met each other in the semi-finals. So no Amy Jones for the Central Sparks, which I fancy hindered their chances just a little bit. They got 140 for 9. Davina Perrin opening the batting looked really good for her 32 from 19. Courtney Webb, the Australian 45, not out. Josie Groves picked up 2 for 16 in the Central Sparks, 140 for 9. The Blaze knocked them off pretty easily in 18 overs. Catherine Bryce with 44, Tammy Beaumont 39. Hannah Baker took 3 for 24 for the Central Sparks, but the Blaze comfortably 5 wicket winners in the first semi-final. Second semi-final, Southeast Stars against the Vipers. The Vipers pulled all of their stars back into action. They brought everyone, but the big names were out in force. This was a proper encounter between these two because, you know, from the Vipers, you had Lauren Bell, you had Charlie Dean, you had Freya Kemp, you had Maya Bouchier, you had Danny Wyatt, Rihanna Southby was playing. I mean, they really did. I'm probably missing some other players that they had, but they brought all of their England players back. And on paper, you would suggest that they had the way stronger side than the Southeast Stars. The Stars, 162 for 5. Sophia Dunkley with 49 from 34. Georgia Redmayne, 39. Paige Schofield, a really important knock of 34 not out of 22 balls. The Vipers fell 5 runs short. Wyatt, 34. Charlie Dean, 43. They finished on 157 for 9. Just couldn't get over the finish line. For the Southeast Stars, Tilly Courtine Coleman, 16 years old, 2 for 23, Danny Gregory 2 for 25, and Tash Farrant bowled an incredible last over. She'd gone the distance in her previous three, but when the game was on the line, she came to the fore and bowled an incredible last over, enabling the Southeast Stars to get through. So the final, the Stars versus the Blaze, and it was a little one-sided. If I'm honest, Stars 141-9 didn't feel enough, and so it was the case that the Blaze knocked them off 144-3. They won by 7 wickets. Catherine Bryce, 62-45. And Sarah Bryce, her sister, 52 not out of 46 deliveries. The Bryce sisters leading the Blaze to glory. First time they have put their name on the Charlotte Edwards Cup. And overall, I think there were absolute value for their victory. You know, their record over the last 2 years, albeit not winning LIDS last year, they really did play the best cricket of the tournament, it seems, and led very, very well by Kirsty Gordon.
Yeah, I mean, that was the first point I was going to say, is we often talk about captains within England, and actually specifically within the England squad, and who will take over from Heather when she eventually retires. But you look at someone like Kirsty Gordon, and tactically, I think she's brilliant. I think she can be feisty, yes, and maybe that will be an element of her game that she will have to try and temper or manage as she develops into a more experienced captain. But I look at the way that she leads the side, because you look at the Blaze team and they're not a Vipers, are they? Where they are star-studded. They're actually a team where everyone knows their role. Yes, they had Tammy Beaumont, but you look at all the other names and you think, well, there's no wow names, and that's not meant to sound disrespectful, but it's actually more of a compliment to say that they are a genuine team. They've got clarity in their roles. You know, Marie Kelly, who obviously opens the batting for them, she knows exactly what she has to do going in. You've got the Bryces, and then you have youngsters like Josie Groves, Lucy Heim, who's been around for a long time. And they've just, to me, I haven't been able to watch all of the Charlotte Edwards Cup, but they look like a genuine team. And you were obviously there all day. Is that a fair assumption of how it played out?
Excellent assessment of what they are, and knowing their roles, that was the key. And I thought Kirsty Gordon tactically was just seemed like she was all over it and all in control. And I agree about that sort of feistiness in her nature. You know, one or two things don't go their way, you can just see a slight change in body. And that's maybe the character. You don't want to take the character out of her captaincy. But what was clear to me was all of the players absolutely respecting what she did and how she went about her business on the field, conducting the bowling changes, the fielding changes, all of that sort of stuff. So that was one aspect. I think also Catherine Bryce. It's very difficult to escape how vital she is, both with bat and ball. Now, in this instance, it was with bat. And she scored over 400 runs in the competition for the Blaze. She's had an incredible 6 months when you think about it. We spoke previously on the podcast about her experience in the WPL with the Gujarat Giants. I can't tell you how much I think that has helped her development as a player, playing under that environment and that pressure. Then leading Scotland to qualification for the T20 World Cup as captain. And then her input and how good she was and how well she played. And she really did lead. It was, you know, her tempo to her innings, she just looked on a different plane at the moment. And she's just going through an incredible purple patch at the moment. And who's to say where it can stop?
Yeah, and well, Sarah Bryce as well is probably quite close. Well, obviously, very closely linked. Obviously, they're sisters, but she
has quite closely linked. Yes,
blood. She seems blood related. But she also seems to have gone up another level as well. Yeah. Is that also fair?
Yeah, I think that's absolutely fair. And again, they just looked in complete control, and it was, you know, you look at Chris Guest, who's a coach of, you know, part of the coach or the head coach of the Blaze, and what he's done with that side and with the players that he's got, and just they're so solid. To me, that actually looked like there was only ever going to be one winner in that competition, because they just knew what they were doing. And what's lovely to see, in a way, as well, is that. Not for Tammy, but having Tammy come back and not be the main contributor within the side. You know, she got run out in the final at the non-strikers end, nothing she could have done about it as well. But to see other players step up, I just thought they were fantastic. They really were fantastic. It was a great day, Lynn. It really was.
Yeah, I was going to ask you that. Yeah.
It was
just in terms of the vibes and everything.
Yeah, to see, I thought there was a decent crowd without it being a huge crowd. It would have been nicer to see a few more. But, you know, obviously England are playing in the Euros and there's loads of other stuff going on at this moment in time. And that's, you know, one of those things. I thought one shout out to the Derbyshire ground staff. I thought the surface that they prepared for the finals day was absolutely brilliant. It had something for everyone. You can play shots on there. The bounce was true. There was a little bit of turn, a bit of seam, just enough to encourage bowlers. I thought they did a sensational job. But there was numerous takeaways for me on this day. And some of the things that you might, you know, I talked about Tash Farron. She bowled better in the final than she did in the semi-final. But the run out that she got in the semi-final against the Vipers, at first I didn't clock on, and then I saw the replay where she actually guided the ball. You know, it's one of those where the ball gets hit back to the bowler, it flicks the fingers, and it goes onto the non-striker's end stumps, and the batter has run out. She actually guided, almost like a pass, when the ball was coming back at her, and deflected it in such an angle that she meant to do it. And I thought that was an incredible piece of awareness and skill from Tash Farron, as well as coming back and bowling a miserly last over after she'd gone, I think it was 3 overs for 33. I thought that was a real pressure cooker situation, and the class just rises in that situation. That was one takeaway, at least.
Yeah. I mean, would you say, obviously, I was going to ask you about players who actually might, through performances within the Charlotte Edwards Cup, who might now be on England radars, would you put Tash Farron in that rank, considering as well the conditions in Bangladesh?
I would. Because of the, and I think a lot of the time as well, you know, I for her, I would bowl the first over and see if it swings. If it doesn't, take her off, right? Take her off, because I think she's more value to you in the middle overs and at the death, coming round the wicket, bowling those cutters that she has, skiddy cutters, which are difficult to get away. And she gets a lot of purchase on them as well. And she's got a decent Yorker to fire in. So, and also with her coming on, from the batting perspective, I think she's added a different dynamic to her game. So should be considered. There's other... I was really pleased to see the way the two young leg spinners bowled, Josie Groves and Hannah Baker. I thought they were both ace. Josie Groves' mum, Anita, dancing away at the back of the stand. Classic Anita Groves, but she loves it. And it's great to have that support. I thought both of them bowled really, really nicely. The one who I actually just went, okay, was Katie George. I thought she came back. Now, you look at her figures, I think she got 1 for 30 off 4 in the semi-final against the Blaze. But the Blaze were just, you know what, they were just coasting to victory. She came on, bowled bouncer, Yorker. She bowled with a bit of pace as well. Round the wicket, bowled cutters, and made something happen. She got the wicket, and she was brought back on to do that role. And it was great to see her bowling with a bit of pace again. I still think she can add to that somewhat, but that was really pleasing after having a couple of years where injuries have really set her back after making her England debut. I thought, ooh, there's something that's nice to see. So I thought she bowled really, really well. When you want a bowler to make something happen, go out and get a wicket and change the course of the game, she did that. And I was hugely impressed with that. Tilly Courteen Coleman.
Yes.
TCC.
TCC,
first opportunity
yes.
to look at her properly. I don't want to say she's a clone of Sophie Eccleston, but there's a lot of similarities, I've got to tell you. Short run up, lovely control, fingers, ball coming out of the fingers over the top. There's a lot to like about her, and I think she will be kept a close eye on. But she was hugely impressive for me. as was, we talked about Price. I liked the way that Davina Perrin batted. I think she's got a lot to offer a lot of sides. I'll be intrigued to see if they open with her in the 100, the Manchester Originals, I think it was. I think it was the Manchester Originals that picked her up last pick of the draft. I could be wrong, and my apologies as I am, but she was the last pick of the draft. I think you could do very, very nicely with her opening the batting and being given the license. She's powerful, she's strong, she hits 360. I think there's a lot to like about her still. Yeah.
Well, and she's still young as well, isn't she? She's still got so much developing to do in terms of that management of the batting situation. But yeah, I'm with you on Tilly Courtine Coleman as well. I'm probably a bit biased because she's a Kent girl and I've seen her as a youngster, but she's got a lot of potential.
Yeah, you like what you're seeing
as well. Yeah, absolutely. Paige Schofield, tell me about her, because she seems, again, as someone who over the, I'd say the last couple of years, has really come into her own. And I just wrote I wrote five players who just stood out for me for one reason or another. And she was second in my list because of the way that she scored her runs. Would you agree with that? How impressed have you been with her?
I was massively impressed, especially in that semi-final. Her innings, 34 not out of 22 deliveries. I mean, that just gave the Stars the impetus they needed into the second innings, and to obviously post a total that was just a little bit beyond the Vipers. You've got to look at that Vipers batting lineup and go, my God, we're going to need something decent here against a side full of internationals. That was the innings that, as you know, as well as Dunkley played in that one, as well as Georgia Redmayne played, it was her innings that actually, I think, won the game for the Southeast Stars. And as well as the Stars bowled, I think that was the difference. And she looked hugely impressive. She's powerful, she's strong. And again, the strokes that she was able to play, she didn't look flustered. It looked like a role that she was completely comfortable with. And they're difficult to find. Middle order hitters are actually difficult to find in T20 cricket. And I thought she was hugely impressive. There's one player I do want to talk about, and this is not in a negative way, but I am a little worried and concerned, and hopefully my worries and concerns will not bear out. And that's Sophia Dunkley. Now, Sophia obviously lost her form and lost her place in the England side last year. She went back to domestic cricket and to basically been asked to go and spend some time at the crease, churn out a load of runs, and she has done just that, and good on her for doing that. To churn out runs, to take a look at her technique and the things that she struggled with in the international game. Now, we know that the majority of her strokes, and which was, I think I'm using the royal we here, but I don't think I'm too far off the mark, that she was limited in a certain way where she would hit from long off down to deep backward square because of this closed face that she's got. And just sort of playing around the front pad and her head tilting over. And good bowlers, especially spinners that take the ball away from the right-hander, was her undoing. You look at her statistics this year, and they're hugely impressive, massively impressive. And she has done all that she's been asked to do. 293 runs at an average of 97 in the Rachel Hayhoe Flint, 265 runs in the Charlotte Edwards Cup, and she's third on the list, averaging 30, striking at 124. Now, these are great numbers, really good numbers. But I'm looking a little bit beyond that, and I'm looking about that. She's been brought back into the England side, and which is great, and so she should, given her domestic form. But what I wanted to see, and I think what you wanted to see, was there a change in technique? My worry is, Led, is that both of the times that she was dismissed in the Charlotte Edwards Cup, she was out stumped to spinners that take the ball away from the right-hander. One was Josie Groves, one was Kirsty Gordon. She came down the track trying to turn it into the leg side, and because of that closed face, it spun past her and she was undone. And that is a bit of a worry to me. The 49 that she scored, it was mainly off spin. So the ball turning back into the right-hander, which is in her hitting arc. Lauren Bell bowling in swing to her. That also is into her hitting arc. So I'm a little bit worried that the technique hasn't changed dramatically. And why I'm saying this is when you get up against South Africa, India, Australia, they're just going to stick bowlers that move the ball away from the bat. Am I being too harsh, or is it
yeah.
Because that's what I saw.
Yeah, I mean, I have to admit, I saw the same. As I said, I didn't manage to see all of the games and everything that happened, but I did see her dismissals. I also saw the majority of her scoring shots were in that area that you've sort of highlighted, long off through to deep backward square. So the thing that I am intrigued to know, actually, is what the coach's message was to her after she
absolutely.
Was dropped is
absolutely.
Was it go away and score lots of runs? Okay, well, if that was it, then she's done everything that she can. Or was it
absolutely
we need you to change your technique? So my concern is that has the messaging been right to Sophia Dunkley? But you would 100%. Also hope that she's got that own awareness within her own cricketing brain that she knows she's got this technical weakness. And I don't think her setup has changed a huge amount. And as you say, when she does go into international cricket, if the teams that she's coming up against have got enough tactical nous, they will be able to counteract and starve her of runs and get her wicket. So I hope for Sophia Dunkley's case that I don't know, that her, I don't see a huge change in the technique.
I think you've hit the nail absolutely on the head. Because if she was, and again, I'm sure the coaches will have sort of highlighted certain areas to work with, but how closely, because for me, she needed a overhaul of the technique to bring in, because at the moment, she's only hitting to sort of 40% of the ground. Some will argue she hits through the offside. She does on short balls. She's still able to cut with that technique. So you can hit it through backward point and stuff. But the majority of that of her technique will hit it in that 40% arc. And it is no slight on her whatsoever if the coaches have not been working with her to actually overhaul the technique and change it to bring in more of the hitting areas that she could potentially do. The talent and the power, all there. But, you know, I think you're setting someone up to fail if you're just saying go back and score a load of runs. She's good enough to do that within the domestic structure anyway. It's can your technique be changed for when you play against Australia in a World Cup semi-final? And I think I'd be interested to know on that. And look, I hope she goes and scores an absolute stackful for England in those colours. It's just a concern. It's a worry I have that I didn't see enough of the technique change. Anyway, it was a brilliant day. A brilliant day, Charlotte Edwards. Congratulations to Kirsty Gordon and the Blaze. We would have brought you an interview with Kirsty Gordon, which was conducted by myself after the game. It was a lovely interview. It was about 5 minutes I got to speak with Kirsty Gordon. But because I'm a moron, the microphone did not work. And so if you're watching this on the video on YouTube, you can see I will put a screenshot up of me interviewing Kirsty, but the fact that you can't hear it is pretty much means the interview is unusable. So I wouldn't subject you all to that. But congratulations to the Blaze. My mistake. I'm so sorry, Kirsty Gordon. But maybe next time I will check that the microphones are all working properly. Right, let's move on. Let's get our guest on because we're looking forward to what should be a fantastic series starting on Wednesday in Durham. Well, I'm hugely pleased to say that previewing the New Zealand Women England Women's Series is former New Zealand international Katie Martin, who is now globetrotting around the world. Have microphone will travel, and she'll be joining us as part of the Sky Sports commentary team for the series as well. Katie, thank you so much for joining us. You've been a busy sausage, haven't you?
I know. Sausage, that's one way to put it. I feel like I'm wobbling around a wee bit.
The air miles are absolutely churning out. We saw each other at the WPL, of course. Since then, you went back home, and then you've just been at the World Cup, the T20 Men's World Cup. Is that right?
Yep. I went back home. We had the England series back home in New Zealand, and then then what did I do? My mum came up for 10 days, cleaned the house and then left, and then I was good to go and helped me pack my bag. So, yeah, I've been over in the West Indies and Miami watching a little bit of rain there as well. So my first Men's World Cup, which was pretty cool in terms of T20. So it was a different experience. Yeah, there was a lot of hotel rooms and spent watching a little bit of rain, but that was an awesome experience. As always, as you know, Dag, is traveling the world, and West Indies is a different place at times, and sometimes I feel a little get out my shell a wee bit with the way that the West Indian people dance and that, and I spent a lot of time with Danny Morrison, and he's a little bit of a nut bar at the best of times, which is great for my personality. So I'm very, very lucky to do what I do.
I was going to ask you, who was the team out there? So Danny Morrison was one, and he's an absolute beauty. Who else was with you?
We had Ian Smith was there, Simon Dool, Cass Naidu. So we had sort of people pegged in and out a wee bit, and then a few of the English people in Miami. So we all just ended up at this one local place called Elbow Room with no W on the end, and the pure American bands, which you would have been well into. And Liz, I know that you like rocking around a wee bit as well. So, yeah, there was a lot of socialising and a lot of preparation for games that didn't happen, which was a bit of a shame. That was sort of that Miami week was banking up to be a really important week in the tournament for that group, with India and Pakistan and the likes. But, it's a cool experience. And I've learnt, you know, that chicken and chips are the things to go in Guyana. So suffice to say, I've been hitting the pavements in London a little bit.
And what about, just before we get into actually talking about the series, you seem to have made the transition from retiring. You only retired in 2022. And now you're straight into the comms box. Like, you've done that so seamlessly. You're obviously enjoying it all.
Yeah, it's good fun. I sort of thought to myself, how do I want to go about this? Like, what do I want to be on air? And I thought, well, I don't know anyone else but myself, so I'll be myself and either you love me or hate me.
A place to start.
Dag and I had a great conversation in the WPL about this. And so, yeah, it's just challenging in terms of always traveling and, you know, yeah. I was joking about mum, but she was like, you know, is any time you can spend at home? And I'm like, well, you know, this is sort of the life at the moment. And it's been great. I was able to see a few of the girls. I went up to Leicester to watch the warm-up game, which is a real cricket tragic thing in me. but to see your mates that you don't get so much time with. So yeah, it's such a cool lifestyle, and I just love the game. And so being able to get paid to talk about the game you love, like you guys as well, it's sort of a bit of a pinch yourself moment. So I'm sure I'll have a summer holiday in some summer around some period of the world. It might be more August rather than December.
Well, even though it has been a very quick transition and obviously quite a lot happening for you in a short space of time on the commentary front, you have absolutely hit the nail on the head. And it was a joy commentating with you in the WPL, because you are yourself, and that is all you can ever be when it comes to commentary. And it was you've done so fantastically, and that's not meaning to sound condescending or passionate. You've as Lydia said, you've taken to it like a duck to water, and audiences respond and engage to that, and that it's just got to be commended. But it's great to have you on our shores. It's great to have you over here. Great to know that your mother is cleaning your place whilst you are over here. That's got to relax you a little bit. But you are here for a reason. You're here to commentate on the New Zealand England series. We've got 3 one-day internationals to kick things off, then the 5 T20s that are dotted around the place. First off, what's your expectation? England went over to New Zealand, won 2-1 in the ODI series, 4-1 in the T20 series, so pretty dominant overall. Where is New Zealand cricket at the moment from a women's perspective, Katie? I know that's a very general question, but I think it's a good place to start.
Yeah, it is a great question. I think reflecting on that series, you look at it and you go, well, New Zealand didn't get the scores necessarily in terms of wins. I think they really had England in trouble in periods, you know, 5 for 80-odd, 6 for 80-odd, and there were moments that they could actually have won those games, especially in the one-day games. Maybe not as much in the T20s, but it's a couple of years ago, New Zealand cricket made the decision that they would invest in the youth and being able to bring up a number of younger players and contract those players. So we're seeing a lot of players develop on the international stage, And it's sort of trying to have those experienced players still in the squad to help also uplift those younger players. So at the moment, I feel like New Zealand cricket are going, we've invested, we've had a couple of years, where are the results coming? And so now there's the how much noise is coming around results and what do the performances look like? And it's sort of at that point where I've spoken about this a few times. I still think we're probably a good few years behind most international teams because of the fact that, you know, we have top-loaded the funding in terms of the White Ferns and the high-performance program, and then how does that start to filter down around the development? Domestically, there's equal match payments and so on, but it's how you get a little bit more professionalism in that area. The coaching is becoming a lot more full-time in the major associations for us, which is the equivalent of the counties. So that's allowing available resources to coach those players of interest and so on. But, yeah, there's still a bit of time and a bit of patience, I think, that's needed. But in saying that, there's a good amount of experience in the group that the team, you know, would like to be performing a lot more consistently better than they are.
What about, you sort of mentioned the, obviously, the funding and top-loading the, I guess, the international players, which I think England did that back in 2014 when the ECB said, right, let's make, I think it was like 16 or 17 players fully professional and that will solve it. There'd be world beaters and that'll be fine. And that didn't really work out how they wanted it to. So domestically, where is the game at the moment? And I suppose, what would you want to see to make sure that, you know, the next young players coming through are ready to perform straight away on the international stage rather than taking that little bit longer?
Yeah, so in their domestic, the girls are all amateurs, so they all work. They get paid equal match payments than the domestic boys. So that might be, what, $700 a game. So they'll get maybe $15,000 New Zealand dollars. It's really great because when I spend money on my coffee, I just double it. So that's what, £7,500. So that gives them the opportunity to be able to earn a little bit of income that they may lose from unpaid days at work and so on. For me, I think where we need to get to is that how do we get three or four players within each major association that might be contracted? So that might be 6 months of the year. How do we have those athletes full-time training, being able to work on not just their skills but also the personal development aspect, which I think is so important around having stuff outside of cricket, so that you have your 17 White Ferns contracted players, then you might have another 10 players around the major associations that you go, right, we've got 30 players that we can pick from, knowing that from a domestic player you can have the opportunity to then move into a full-time contract domestically, and then you have the pathways around New Zealand A and under 19s and so on. So they did the series against England A was fantastic for us, and we were successful in that. And I think it opened people's eyes to say, hang on, we've actually got more talent than what we actually believe, but how do we allow those players to gain that experience against top sides? And I'm sure that you guys will know how England A play Australia A so much and India A, and that A program is so important to the feeder group. That's the only way you're lessen the jump from domestic to international cricket. And I remember I say this all the time and people go, oh, you're too old school, Katie. But, you know, when I remember in 2009, and Liz, you'll know that was the year for England and New Zealand. Mm-hmm. That was our year where we played two World Cup finals in 6 months. I did see the other day that it was the anniversary of you guys winning at Lords. And I remember we won the
retweet, unfortunately.
Oh, we won the toss, right? Daggers, this is a real killer for me. We won the toss. You know, at Lords, you look up, you look down, you go, well, let's just keep looking up. It was overcast, it was green, it was a double header because the boys played after us. We're like, yep, we'll have a bat first, thank you. And we're on the floor and going, oh, my God.
I think that was when Catherine...
We'll give you 2 World Cups this year, no worries.
Catherine Brunt had that black eye, didn't she, as well, remember? Yeah.
It's an interesting, it's just to pick up on that, and this is for you too as well, Led, is that the nature of the women's game back in England, the UK, changed dramatically when the domestic players did become full-time. The amount of time you can dedicate to your training, the amount of time you can dedicate to that, it is a career as opposed to something else you do other than your normal job, wherever you may work, whether it's in a school or whether it's in insurance or whatever it is. So that would be a huge benefits to New Zealand. And the nature of cricket really did change, Lyd, didn't it, with domestic players being able to dedicate more time. I'll let you answer that. But also on the flip side of that, Katie, is the fact that you can only, you're talking about maybe four players per state or region or whatever to get contracted. Is that just because there is limited funds, given New Zealand's finances at board level, as opposed to England's, New Zealand's, and England's, Australia's, and India's, where they have got a huge amount of wealth that can actually fund more domestic professional players? So I know I've asked two questions, but Lyd, you know, the change was noticeable, wasn't it?
Yeah, I think it was, and I think for me, it's just always about opportunity. Like, you can say these players aren't ready. Well, of course they're not ready, because you're not giving them the opportunity. As soon as you give them any amount of opportunity, the increase in their ability to perform at a better level will go up very, very quickly. So you have to start somewhere. So, and we did actually start there, obviously, with our new regional structure as well. Mm. I think for the first year or two, it was just 5 or 6 professional contracts per region.
Yeah.
And then all it does is it just allows you time on task to develop your skills, more games, develop your match awareness, tactical sort of nous, and all that sort of, I guess, the elements to the game of cricket. And it's even interesting. I was just reading Michaela Gregg, who was called up to the New Zealand squad. Like, I listened to an interview of her, and it was a couple of weeks out, the call-up that she had, and she had to get time off work to be able to come and play for New Zealand. So I guess that probably leads on to Katie being able to answer her question, is even now some of the Kiwi girls are still working full-time as well, and they're having to find time to become better cricketers, which... Well, Katie and I both know that's pretty tough, to be honest, isn't it?
Yeah. I just think if we can have a good core group of players, 30-odd players we can select from that are training day in, day out, it helps with the fitness standards. I think that's something that has always probably been a criticism of the team, is that it hasn't been fit enough, it hasn't been able to perform in, I guess, tough situations. And I think that's where we've seen Australia and England have really progressed in terms of that fitness levels and the skill levels. So, yeah, I think it's a mandatory, if we can have a good 30 players to select from, then it will help the standards lift in New Zealand. And where that filters down to, whether it's those domestic contracts and some New Zealand A level, but it's limited money in New Zealand, unfortunately. So it's how you use that the best you can.
What about, obviously, the big four or five in the team? Everyone always talks about, obviously, Susie Bates, Sophie Devine, you've got Mealy Kerr as well, Leah Tahuhu to a certain extent. The role of those players, obviously, they're not going to be able to carry on forever. And you do often look at results. And I think for New Zealand to have success, they're often the ones who are putting in those big performances, you know, the big hundreds. How do you see their role in the next couple of years? And I guess, how important are they to the group? Because there's such a fine balance, isn't there, of making sure they're the ones who are always given the opportunity, but then looking ahead to the future as well.
It's a really interesting question, because you hear quite often, I mean, I always laugh about my own career. I would have finished when I was probably 32, which was, I shouldn't say, I hate saying my age. I still feel like I'm 28, but anyway. you feel like if there was that, the development come through for a period, then you wouldn't have played as long as you would have, because you'd had that that competition. I guess, you know, the likes of Susie, who'll probably be, you know, and Sophie, they'll be late 30s when they finish up their careers. I think they're vital to be able to lift those standards quickly. And like, I look at Susie Bates at training, and, you know, Mealy Kerr, who arguably surpassed Susie's career when she's finished. You see the competitiveness and the competition between those two, and you watch players just watch them and go, oh, hang on, is this what how the best in the world train? Is this what they're about? How do I learn and take that experience? So you can say, well, you know, those older players, they've got to go. But ultimately, who are you replacing them with? And we don't have that in New Zealand at the moment to say, we can bring someone in to replace those senior players. Mm. Leah's might be a bit of an exception because, you know, being a fast bowler, as you'll know, Daggers, your knees get a little bit weary and you have to manage yourself a little bit more. And
awfully replaced. Yes, absolutely.
Yes. See, Lids and I, we've got it good. I mean, I didn't keep for my whole international career, so it's been lucky. But, you know, Lids, although Liz, your knees probably got sore from all that sweeping, I would have said. But,
oh, no. Yeah, one shot wonder. No, it's interesting. Sorry, go on, Daggers.
Yeah, I was just, as it's interesting when you look at those, the big four, and obviously the change in generation, which will come in due course, as you say, they are getting on. It's difficult to try and escape that. What are the New Zealand expectations then? And I talk not just in the series against England coming up, because you would imagine that England are pretty heavy favourites, you would have to say, but also then going forward to the Bangladesh T20 World Cup. What is the expectation, the realistic one? What would be, apart from winning the whole thing, but what can New Zealand realistically expect from both this series and then moving forward to Bangladesh?
Yeah, the group in the T20 World Cup for New Zealand's pretty tough, to be honest. India, Australia, Sri Lanka, who have been probably the surprise package over the last 2 years in women's cricket, and then Pakistan in those conditions. And knowing the amount of time that, you know, we've spent in select playing, it can be really challenging in terms of those conditions. Every expectation is that New Zealand would make a semi-final at a bare minimum, and nothing ever changes from the expectation of that. But I think if you look realistically where the team is at the moment, you know, we lost the series against Pakistan. We've lost games against Pakistan, who, you know, was really outplayed by England recently. And Sri Lanka, we lost the one-day series there last year as well. So, you know, I think we're probably in that fourth, fifth position at the moment. So in terms of our ranking, I think we're fifth in ODIs as well. So the expectation is to make it, but realistically it's going to be a challenging T20 World Cup. And I think in those conditions and the way that India are playing as well and their development of players coming through, which you both have seen in various capacities, is pretty scary. So I think there's talent, there's experience. The top five or six players are some of the great players that New Zealand will ever have. Devine, Bates, Kerr. You've had Green that's been around for a period, Rowe and Halliday as well. So there's players that are experienced at the international level. It's just backing the skills and being able to perform consistently. And if that does happen, then New Zealand are a really, really dangerous side.
Mm. And what about this series, obviously, against England? Where do you see England as someone who's, obviously, you've played against them a lot, you've seen their development. What do you think that contest will be like between the two sides?
Oh, we're two very friendly teams, Liz, you know that. I said this earlier, I think New Zealand, the key part for New Zealand is how they be a bit more braver against the top nations, and that's the discussions that they'll be having within the group of, I think in New Zealand they allowed them to bowl to them, especially the trio will spin through the middle, which it'll be interesting how England go about selecting their side and whether the focus for them is going to be on how they want to bowl in Bangladesh and whether that's going to be the focus purely both in ODIs and the T20 series. I think having Sophie Devine fully fit and back, she is such a key factor for New Zealand. She scored 100. I love the romance of cricket, right? You need six to win and you need six to score 100, and she did both. So, so yeah, she's coming off some form. So she'll be really crucial for New Zealand through that middle order. So I think the expectation is there that they can compete. It's just like when you always play against Australia and England, you have to compete for the full 100 overs or for the full 40 overs. And it's such a cliche, but you just give them a slight sniff and then they're away. And then you always feel like you're chasing the game at that point. So it's just letting go of the shackles a wee bit and just expressing themselves.
I have often said, and we had a discussion about this on the last podcast, myself and Lydia, about Mealy Kerr. Mm. Now, here is the number two all-rounder in the world. And I maintain she's got the potential to be one of the best cricketers that has actually played played in the women's game. Her skills are off the scale. She's still very young. It's very easy to forget that she is still very young. But I feel like that she really now has to take over this side. And I don't think I've seen her win enough games by herself for New Zealand. Now, this is cricket that I've covered. Now, she's a wonderful bowler. She's a wonderful batter, brilliant in the field, and we've seen her do it on the franchise circuit. But I've never seen her really grab games by the scruff of the neck and say, do you know what? I'm going to win this. I'm going to do it. I'm good enough. I am good enough for whoever I'm playing against, whether it be England or Australia. Now, it's a limited sample size, given the amount I've seen her over in this country. But is there a feeling that there is more to come from Amelia Kerr? Because the potential is off the charts.
Yeah, I think that she's been working a lot on her power game. And I think that's something that, when she does develop that, I talk about her being like Kane Williamson for New Zealand, it's all about the craft and how the guile and being able to manipulate strike and being able to have control and that match winner for you. But I always feel like someone with Kane, he needs that support around him where they can have that power and that explosion. And I think you look at someone like Nat Siver-Brunt, who for me is one of the greatest chasers in all of cricket, men's and women's. Like you see Virat Kohli, like she's up there with that, and she wins games for her side. And I think Sophie Devine's probably more been that person, not necessarily consistently, but more regularly than not. And it's saying if Merle Kerr can do that and that craft and create a little bit more power in her game, which I know that she's trying to get that in there because of the amount of franchise cricket she's playing as well, then she'll do that job. And she does it domestically for Wellington. It's just on the international scale, it's just a different beast, isn't it? When you've got it going from both ends and you know, it's taking that fear factor out, but also knowing that sometimes you're in a position where it is only you. And so you then go, well, how do I express those skills when if I get out, then what does that mean for the rest of the squad? And that's where I think having the likes of like Izzy Gaze and Brooke Halliday and Hannah Rowe that have contributed in part, if you get more out of those girls, which we saw, you know, Izzy Gaze score a maiden 50 in Wellington, then that I think that allows them to free up a little bit more. And that's probably something that Fair Factor New Zealand have had a lot. It's just kind of held us back in our cricket for a long period of time now. So to take that Fair Factor away, to have the others around that can contribute those 20 or 30 off maybe 15 balls to go, okay, as long as I'm there at the end, then I'm going to win the game. And that maybe that power game doesn't have to be there as much as I think because I've got that support at the other end.
Yeah, she's arguably got the hardest role in the team, hasn't she? You look at Devine and Bates and their roles as batters is very prescriptive. They're at the top of the order, whereas Mealy obviously coming in that middle order role, she's either got people coming in or she hasn't. So yeah. I suppose that makes it a bit trickier as well. But yeah, I mean, I agree with Katie. I think she's going to be like one of the best players in the world for a long, long time.
I actually, and this is the thing, I believe she can do it. I wonder if it's an attitude thing where, you know, that belief in herself to actually sort of say, do you know what, I am going to be the one. This game is won or lost on me. And to have that sort of outward attitude, a bit like you say, like Nat Siver-Brunt does. You know, a lot of the time when it comes to England, especially in, I would argue, 50 over cricket lids, it's Nat Siver-Brunt or bust, because you know, she knows she's got to be the one that's going to be at, you know, either knocking the winning runs off or at least taking it down to the final over. And I genuinely believe Merle Kerr has the talent to actually do that, and soon enough she'll have to take over that role from a Sophie Devine when eventually she calls it quits and the side moves on the next generation. We've not got long left, but obviously you've played in all around the world and stuff. You're now going to have the opportunity of commentating in the pod at Lords, at the Oval, at a variety of different grounds. How much are you looking forward to it?
I'm really excited. I'm very nervous because, you know, you're going to have to keep me in check a little bit.
Why? Why would you want to do that?
I'm trying to practice my proper English. See, I can't even say that.
What? No. And you expect to learn from us?
Yes.
Daggers has moved down south these days, and you should hear some of the stuff that he comes out with. Paddington Station is now Padders, apparently. Padders. He's just getting the train into Padders.
Yeah.
You won't go too far wrong listening to Daggers.
Oh, Lydia, I don't know what you're talking about. I really don't. I've not changed at all since coming down from Bolton in my youth. Really, really not at all. Sorry, Katie, you were saying.
No, I always feel very fortunate and appreciative of the opportunities that I get and working with different people. And I don't know if Lids, we've been on the microphone together, so
no, we haven't.
It'll be a fun experience. I just love the game, and I'm looking forward to, you know, sometimes when you're recently retired, you can live and die by the team, but I feel like I've got a decent separation now that, you know, if someone doesn't score runs, well, that's your own fault. Or it was just a bad umpiring. I'm looking forward to it, and I've watched a lot of it. I've got the old Sky UK and New Zealand, so I watched a bit of it, and I'm a real nuffy now. I watch the pre-shows and the post-shows and write my notes and stuff like that, so I've got a gist of how you guys go about it, so hopefully I can add something to the great coverage that you guys have already anyway.
Well, you certainly will. We can't wait. We can't wait to see you and spend some time with you. And I know that the audiences in the UK are going to absolutely love what you bring to the commentary. But we will see you very, very soon. Thank you so much for joining us on the Daggers and Lids podcast. And we'll have to get you on again maybe at the end of the series.
Yeah, I'll come and hang out. I'm looking forward to it. Let's have bangers and mash at some English pub. I feel like that's the way to go.
And some gravy, some good gravy. Yes.
Just gravy. Just have gravy. That's all
chips
you need. Just
and gravy.
A big bowl of gravy, and then you can dip your chips in. Great to see you. Thanks, Katie.
Thanks, Katie.
Thanks, guys.
Well, how fantastic to have Katie Martin alongside us. Can't wait for that England women's series to start against New Zealand on Wednesday at Durham. You're going to be there. Looking forward to seeing how that's going to go. And the weather looks like it's going to be beautiful up there.
I know, it's great, isn't it? And just this week, actually over the weekend, it's been amazing, and particularly in Durham. I remember games where we've done in Durham, and it has been chilly, so I'm looking forward to a bit of sunshine. And then you'll be back with us in Worcester, won't you?
Worcester, Worcester and Bristol for the second and third, so can't wait for that. Right, we'll quickly wrap up what's going on around the world, because there are two series that we mentioned in the last podcast continuing on at the moment. Lids, start us off. We left the last series between Sri Lanka and the West Indies, that ODI series, with Sri Lanka leading 2-0. How's it ended up?
Yep, so Sri Lanka won that series 3-0, which is their second ever series whitewash against the West Indies. And in that third ODI, Sri Lanka batted first. They posted 275 for 6, Chamari Attapattu making 91. And then in reply, the West Indies were all out for 115. And it was Sanchini Nisansala who picked up 5 for 28. So a brilliant bowling performance from her. And that meant that Sri Lanka won that game by 160 runs. So they obviously win that series 3-0. So good for Sri Lanka.
Yeah,
not
brilliant.
So good for the West Indies. And then going into the T20 series, they've already had one game. And that again went in Sri Lanka's favour. That's actually their first T20 win over the West Indies since 2015. And it sort of follows up, Katie mentioned it, didn't she, about Sri Lanka. They're just sort of, you know, becoming a bit of not a wild card, but a bit of a dark horse, I think, for this T20 World Cup.
Mm-hmm.
But in that game, I don't know if you saw, but Sri Lanka made loads of changes within their side. And the changes actually brought their average squad age down from 29 to 26. One of the changes included an uncapped 17-year-old, Rashmika Sawanda, who came into the side having not made a debut at all for Sri Lanka. So that was good to see. But in that first game, West Indies posted 138, and in reply, Sri Lanka chased it down with 8 balls to spare. And that was without a contribution from Tamari Atapati. She only made 1 of 8 deliveries. So again, more promising signs that Sri Lanka are just sort of on the up, aren't they?
Do you know what? You're right about them being dark horses. They can upset a few, especially in Bangladesh. Jamari did take 4 for 29 in the West Indies. Helly Matthews came back.
Yes.
The West Indies didn't have her available for the last 2 1-day internationals because of illness. She did come back. She made 30. But I agree, it's Vishmi Gunaratne making runs again, Harsita making runs. And the more that Sri Lanka can actually start to get that filter, that belief that they can win games without contributions from Chamari, that is massive for them. And I would just wonder if they could upset one or two. I don't know if they've got the quality and depth to get through to a final or a semi-final, but I still think they can cause one or two people a few problems in that Bangladesh World T20.
Yeah, I agree. So let's keep an eye on them, see how they go. So the last two T20s are on Wednesday, the 26th of June, and then the 28th of June. And then that series will be wrapped up. And then India against South Africa. India have gone on to win that ODI series 3-0. So a whitewash over South Africa. Again, it was more runs for Smriti Mandhana. They were only chasing 215, and in reply she made 90 runs out of 83 deliveries, and there were contributions as well from Harmanpreet Kaur, Shefali Verma and Priya Punia. Jemima Rodrigues finished on 19, not out. Unsurprisingly, Smriti Mandhana finished player of the series, but she just seems to be in the form of her life at the moment.
Unbelievable.
Isn't she?
343 runs, the highest in a 3-match series. That actually overtook Laura Wolfhardt, I think, a year ago. But the thing, 15,000 people at the Chinnaswamy, 15,000, and their local hero, Smriti Mandhana, just bashing it to all parts. Goodness me, they must have been going absolutely crackers. From a South African perspective, Chloe Tryon not available because of a back injury and stuff, so their bowling ranks, the left-arm spin, might have been helpful to South Africa. Marizan Kapp is not bowling at the moment. Yeah. They're trying to manage her workload, understandably so. Some cases I get, some cases I don't, of workload management. Hers, I absolutely do. So they've got a test match coming up. I think they move to Chennai, don't they, now?
Yeah, Chennai next. And then 3 T20s also in Chennai, actually. So, should be a good finish to the series, you would have thought.
Absolutely. Well, we'll try and get some contributions from over in India to get a closer look at the series, because, of course, we're building up to the T20 World Cup in October. All of these series now are just sort of leaning and heading towards that. But we're pretty much wrapped up. Sorry that there is no club spotlight this week. We've just not had time, but do still keep your clubs being nominated. Any clubs that are doing great things and champion your women and girls section, please do so. daggersandlids@outlook.com. Write us something down. Tell us about your club, the history, the characters. We want to know, and maybe your club will be spotlighted. We will try and get that in for the next podcast. But for now, lids, I think we're all done and dusted.
We are. Enjoy your holiday, Daggers.
Thank you very much.
Sunshine. Have a great time. See you in Worcester.
Shall try. I'll be a little bit browner, I hope.
Make sure you put sun cream on, though.